It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. Good to see Captain Mike Ward.
Yes, sir. Sean, how you been?
I've been good. Been good. A special show coming up today. So, we're going to get to that in the second and third segment of the show. But you joined me earlier in the week during Midday Mobile, that other show thing I do.
Right.
And we got to talk to James Hall, editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, on the legacy of Ray Scott.
So very interesting.
It is interesting. I want to get into, before we get into those clips, and that's coming up in just a little bit. And there's so much with the passing of Ray Scott this last week, Sunday.
Right.
At 88, it's one that immediately when I saw it, I think about it from a fishing perspective. I think I told the story of slapping that Bassmaster, the Bass Angler Sportsman Society sticker on my Plano tackle box when I was about 9, 10 years old, something like that.
You were big time if you had a Bassmaster sticker, man.
It was something, because even then, I wasn't a tournament angler. I didn't have a boat. Dad had a boat, but I could have not trailered it with my bicycle. But I was eat up with fishing everything. And there was this group that you could be a member of and get a sticker and magazines and a membership card and all that.
Decal, whatever you call it.
Patch,
there you go.
So I was thinking about this, how exciting that was for me at my age. And then I think about my friend Mike Ward, who was actively fishing competitive bass at that time, actually before that, because I probably would have gotten all that going early 80s. And you were already in this in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. I think around 71 is when I started, when I was in high school. I think I was a member. I know I was. When my 12th year of high school, I was a member of Delta,
12th year of
Delta
school.
Bassmaster.
Maybe 12th year of high school. I don't know how many times they held you back.
Well, thank goodness none, but they should have. I was in Delta Bassmaster back then.
Okay.
You know, that was one of the original bass clubs in Mobile. Now, that ended up being, I don't know, 15, 18, but that was one of the original ones, and man, it was so much fun fishing the tournaments back then. That was just big time.
And it was, but if you'd have gone back 10 years before that, 15 years before that, it wasn't a thing.
No, it wasn't a thing.
It was so new. James talked to us and said something like Ray Scott getting on that Bluebird bus and driving around the South, leaving the seedlings of bass clubs, almost like a Johnny Appleseed thing. Did he go through and then you come back through and look at what's grown? What was that environment like back then? I mean, that's a lot of bass clubs, a lot of people fishing.
Well, that was back in the late 70s. And early 80s when it started being that many. But, you know, back then I had a 14-foot B-Craft with a 20-horsepower Mercury on it.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. I mean, that was a nice rig. But now there were some that had the front seat steering.
Right.
You know,
the tiller
steering. They had the stick steering and would have a 50 on it. A 50 Mercury or Johnson or something on it.
And that was a fast boat.
Oh, that was the boat, man, because when you stopped, you just took it out of gear and you were in the front seat and you started casting.
Yep.
I mean, it was something. I never had one of those, but it was a unique boat back in this day. And look what's happened since then.
Yeah, it's amazing. And would there have been the advancement in boats? Sure, there'd be advancements in boats, but if it wasn't driven by tournaments and what the pros were using, because you were already fishing it. You're junior by 20 years, almost 20 years. You had kids like me watching it the same way I used to watch you on TV and say, that's the thing. When I can get one, that's what I got to get, right? And so the next generation drove the pros are using that, you know, that's what I got to use. And demanding better boats, bigger boats, faster boats.
Live wells that work. I mean, most boats had a live well in it, but it was just water. You put a plug out, water goes into the...
It's almost a bait well.
Yeah, that's all it was. I mean, it was no aeration or anything to really keep the fish alive, especially in any kind of a heat or anything. So all that's changed. You know, a lot of that. Back then, a boat that would run 40 miles an hour man, that was a fast boat. Now they run 100 plus, some right. of them. You know, it's unbelievable.
And that's true.
It was changed.
You know, and I thought about this as well. Like some southern sports that have really become part of Americana. And bass fishing, we're talking about that. NASCAR, right? Yeah. These are southern sports that now are a big thing all over the country. And
all over the world.
And all over the world, you know, which we'll hear in the interview with James Hall about how many countries out there have bass clubs, Bassmaster clubs.
I learned something on that.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it's a testament to Ray Scott that this thing that started here in Alabama, Montgomery guy, this is an Alabama thing, starts here and is something that's international. And it's – so, I mean, for me, it wasn't NASCAR, but bass fishing for me growing up. It was like you had dreams – and even probably more than NASCAR, because there's only so many drivers, and who, you know, not so many kids could have a family that could buy them a car and race and do all that stuff, and racing wasn't my thing. But any of us could dream about being a professional bass fisherman.
Oh, yeah. Back then, I mean, there wasn't that much to it.
Right.
You know, compared to what it is today. But back then, it just wasn't much to it. You didn't have to have near as much as you have to have nowadays.
But at the same time that you have to have more things, the money.
Yeah.
He'll talk about the money. I mean... That purse they had a $10,000 purse on an early tournament for Bassmasters, and it set the world on fire. It was like, it might as well have been $1 million.
But back then, you could buy 3 vehicles, maybe 4 vehicles with $10,000.
That's huge.
Think about that.
That's huge.
Back then, you think, well, $10,000, I wouldn't buy much nowadays. Wouldn't buy hardly anything. You know, wouldn't buy... won't even buy you a golf cart right now.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
But back then, you could buy... at least 3 vehicles and probably 4 vehicles.
So he went out on the limb back then, as the group continues to do. Remember when they had the first $1 million purse? And I think they fished that, like, was that out of New Orleans or somewhere? I remember that when they had that first Bassmaster $1 million. And I remember going, there's $1 million on the line in a bass fishing
tournament. To go have fun and catch fish.
Catching bass. it just moves the sport. But he does that back then. And we'll talk to in the interview with James about that. Just a promoter. Ray Scott, and we're going to talk the fishing part. This is the outdoor show. But the promotion of Ray Scott to take what was just a hobby of his, and there are a few people doing it, and make it this thing that everybody, you'd stop down and watch it on TV. And when it went to TNN and it was on TV on the weekend, I mean, the world stopped for me as a kid. I wanted to watch. I mean, I had my favorites. Maybe I didn't pay as much attention to pro football. I paid attention to pro bass fishing.
Yeah. Everybody did back then, Sean. You know,
yeah,
if you had a channel that had fishing on, you stopped what you were doing and go watch it, because there wasn't that many fishing shows,
no,
period.
It was ESPN
for
a while, and then TNN. And I remember, like, people make the jokes about kids my age, kids from the 80s, watching cartoons on Saturday morning. Well, as soon as ESPN started offering, and we finally got cable after, and offering fishing shows, there are no cartoons in my house. But there were only certain – yeah, now I can go online. I can watch anything I want at any time I want. But back then, what Ray Scott invested in having bass fishing on TV was a big deal for kids like me, that's what I was into.
Yeah. I mean, it was exciting back in the day. Now, I'm telling you, when I was doing this, it was so exciting. I'll never forget, I went to Gulf Coast Jewelry. And a lot of people don't even know what Gulf Coast Jewelry is. They were on Airport Boulevard. They sold jewelry, but they also had the best fishing tackle in town.
There, so you could go buy some tackle and then some jewelry to get out of trouble.
And I'll tell you a story about that, too. Anyway, I go in there, and I'm looking at lures, and I see this guy, and he's talking to this other guy, and he acts like he really knows what he's talking about. And there was a crankbait. And I didn't know what a crankbait hardly was back
then.
But
which is Mike Ward's favorite bass bait.
It was called a Big O. And he was talking about how many fish he caught on it, and how good it was that week and everything. And come to find out, it was Bill Winters at Winters Marina. And I didn't realize that's who it was. But anyway, I bought me a couple of those things while I was there. And I went out, and I caught quite a few bass on it, and I said, man, that guy knows what he's talking about.
Right.
You know, so anyway, it was just, back in the day, it was just nothing like it is today, nothing like it is.
Well, you'll appreciate this story with your time in the sporting goods business. Reading back on some of the things that are posted over at Bassmaster.com about Ray, it shows this young guy that was fishing tournaments that Ray put on, and this guy, wherever he'd travel, he'd find the different baits that were working in those lakes. Yeah. And then he'd buy up a bunch of them, take them back to his store. He had a sporting goods store in Springfield, Missouri. That fisherman's name was Johnny Morris.
Yeah.
So we have talked about him before. My father actually is familiar with the family and all that from the same area of Missouri. But he had a liquor store with some tackle. Yeah. Is where Johnny Morris started. And he'd go fish in these tournaments and find out what's working and then buy a bunch of them, bring them back to his store in Missouri. That became Bass Pro Shops.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well, that's what got me into the sporting goods business. It was my bass fishing, my love for bass. I was guff fishing too at the time,
right?
But it was my love for bass fishing that really got me into the sporting goods business. I mean, at that time, I was going to do one or two things. I was going to try to turn pro and fish the bass tournaments, the bass circuits,
right?
Or I was going to open up a sporting goods store. I was going to do one of the two. I was going to try one of the two,
right?
And I decided to do, because my dad would, you know, go partnerships in it.
Right.
Decided to do the sporting goods. So that's how the sporting goods
store. So your excitement of tournament bass fishing drove you to start?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was going to try pro. You know, that's what I was going to do when I got out of school and out of trade school. That's what I was going to do, try to become pro. But I went into the sporting goods business. So it was all over bass, BASS.
It's amazing. All right. Yeah. When we come back from the news break here, our interview, Mike and I talking to James Hall, editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, and then we'll come back to wrap it all up on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And mentioned this on the show yesterday, and we put some notes up on our social media that this was coming. Not just the fact that James Hall, editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, is joining us on the show, but my cohort, my show host
semi-crime.
For FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, of course, that you hear on Saturday. Mike Ward in studio.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, and you and I have been talking off-air, too, about the legacy of Ray Scott, who passed away over the weekend. I think yesterday I said, you know, I distinctly remember this, and this would have been in the 80s, receiving my packet when I joined Bass, putting that sticker on the top of the Plano tackle box. And at that point, I couldn't have trailered a boat because I was riding a BMX bicycle, but bass meant everything to me. Of course, you were in the 70s in the competitive bass fishing world that started right here, you know, tournaments all through our area.
When it first got started, I mean, I think 1971, I believe, is when I got in Delta Bassmasters, and everybody had a Bassmaster sticker. Everybody. I mean, that's what started everything.
Yep.
Ray Scott started everything with bass clubs and all that. As far as I know, there wasn't bass clubs before that. Could have been, but I didn't know of any of them.
So James Hall, director or editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, joins us now to talk about that. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Oh, guys, thanks so much for having me on, and I sure appreciate y'all celebrating the life of Ray Scott. He was a special man.
Tell folks who do not know Ray Scott, which they must have been under a rock, but who was Ray Scott, and who was this man, where was he from, and why did he decide to start this?
Well, you know, Ray was born and bred Alabamian, grew up most of his life down in Montgomery, Alabama, and he was a salesman, you know, before this whole fishing thing. He was an insurance salesman, which seems, you know, interesting and appropriate, really. But, you know, there was one day in 1967 when he realized, you know, he was watching TV, got rained out from a fishing trip, and he could see basketball on television and tennis on television. He started thinking to himself, man, why can't I see my favorite sport on television, which was bass fishing? So they call that the brainstorm and the rainstorm, and it kind of went from there. He decided to put a big tournament together Because before that, they were all there. The, you know, fishermen were liars and cheaters. You couldn't tell what how big they were or how many they caught. No one ever told the truth. And the same, honestly, was true with the few bass fishing tournaments and clubs that existed in those days. People bring in frozen fish, and you know they win the $10 derby or whatever. Well, Ray went on a mission to legitimize it, which he did. He went on a mission to popularize it, which he did, and. And, you know, being a salesman and more than that, a showman and a promoter, he turned this little idea in 1967 into a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry.
Yeah, and I want to get to all the promotion parts of it, too. But also, you just have a multi-billion dollar industry. This was, I mean, this truly started like a kitchen table idea, right? Or there on the couch, not able to watch bass fishing. It was a homespun.
Yeah, it was in his hotel room right before he went to dinner. He legitimately got rained out of a fishing a weekend that he had with his buddy, got frustrated, and on a napkin. He wrote down his ideas and then told his fishing partner at dinner and then set about, you know, not long after quitting his insurance job and going full force into this concept that he had.
That concept then comes to fruition when? Because we're talking about 67. When's the first tournament that got rid of the cheaters and liars and had some validation to it?
That was in 1967. That was, I think, the Beaver on Beaver Lake, the All-American Invitational. And, you know, it was interesting. He called folks and tried to scrounge, get as many names of really good tournament anglers. He kind of pitched the Memphis guys against some Oklahoma guys and made it a bit of a rivalry so they'd show up and fish. But yeah, that first event was in 1967. He had a few more and through 1968, and in 1968 is when he actually founded BASS, Bass Angler Sportsman Society.
So you know, I can just imagine, you know, he's writing all this stuff down on a napkin and he's going to dinner with everybody that he's fishing with and he's tossing these ideas out. And I guarantee you the first 100 people he talked to probably said, man, you're crazy. What are you talking about? You're never going to do that. There ain't no way you can do that. That's a crazy idea. I guarantee you that. That's what happens a lot of times that people are just super successful because nobody else would do it.
Yeah, that is it. You know, I heard a great story about Ray when he was first pitching, becoming a member of BASS. And as Bob Cobb tells it, he said he was had a little table and had a bunch of guys there, and one of them was walking away without buying a membership. And he says, well, I see you have a cross around your neck, and I know you'll probably get to heaven, but you'll get to heaven a whole lot easier if you're a Bass member. Yeah, I mean, it was just stories like that that are, you know, made Ray who he was and different than everybody else.
You talk about the multi-billion dollar sport it is. On that first, we go back there to 67 or later. I mean, what kind of payouts were there? Because, I mean, right now it's the payouts, the money, the big excitement. What kind of money were we talking about for these anglers?
Oh, it was several thousand dollars back then. And then when he had the first Classic, he promised a $10,000 payout, which was just unheard of amount of money back in those days, and the guys, you know, a lot of them didn't believe that he could do it, and he had a whole lot of help and a whole lot of people that believed in him to make that a reality. But yeah, it was, you know, $3,000-$4,000 for the winner of that first event, which was huge. And you know, he penned a set of rules on that same napkin to help legitimize the sport and eliminate cheating. And, you know, the basic rules that he penned, 50-something years ago, are still basically utilized by every tournament organization today.
It's amazing to watch that the legacy of those rules. Also, if people are listening to us right now that aren't like all of us and like to go fishing, but a story of entrepreneurship that we're getting into. Talk about his ability to be a promoter. Give us, I mean, talk about just the tip of the iceberg of those stories out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, when we started our biggest event called the Bassmaster Classic, kind of our Super Bowl of bass fishing, if you will, it was, the first one was just a handful of people showed up on a dock, and he called it a mystery lake. I mean, he had the ability to create suspense and dramatics with just about anything. So he created a mystery lake venue, so none of the anglers knew where they were going, problem with that is nobody knew where to show up to watch it. So eventually, he turned these events into places and destinations that anglers or fishing fans in general or outdoor fans in general would want to come visit. And as a promoter, I mean, he would come in those things riding on an elephant. He would come in from the ceiling inside of a giant egg. You know, I mean, these are not things that you would, that the normal human being would consider when trying to get fans excited about a fishing derby. But Ray Scott did them. And people were excited to see him because you just never knew what he was going to do next.
I mean, that is one of the stories here, y'all, of how to get attention for whatever that thing you're doing is, that new thing, that revolutionary thing.
Don't let people tell you it won't work. You know,
that's
I
right.
guarantee you that's what people told Ray.
It's proven to you know what, there's a path forward, that is for sure. If you're just joining us, talking to James Hall, editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, and the legacy of Alabamian Ray Scott, founder of Bassmasters. When did that change, something that seems so common in the bass fishing world now, in the tournament world, when did the switch from kill tournaments to live release, when did that happen?
That happened in the mid to late 70s, and that's an interesting story because Ray was a guy who founded the base, you know, his business on a fish. And so, and if you look at the early photos of Bassmaster tournaments, they're just giant, you know, boats, aluminum boats filled with dead bass. And and he's like, man, you know, I know that fish can procreate and make more, but at this rate, you know, will I have anything to catch, or my guys have anything to catch in 5 years down the road? So he went to a trout show out west in the mid 70s, and he saw how excited these guys got about releasing these little tiny goofy trout back into the stream. I mean, yeah. They barely even touch them; they were so scared of hurting the fish. And then he thought to himself, you know, if these guys are excited about releasing a, you know, a 6 ounce little brook trout, how excited should bass anglers get when they release a 7 pounder back into the water to be caught again? So he started the don't kill your catch ethic, which then became commonly referred to as catch and release. And, you know, I bet there are millions of guys out there who catch a fish and throw it back in the water and don't know why. You know, that's just what you do. And it's what you do because that's what Ray Scott decided was going to be the ethic of bass fishermen.
Y'all think about that. When you go through that motion, that one man comes up with this and changes the game.
A lot of things had changed too back then, John, because they didn't have live wells.
That's
back
what I was going to say.
This drove
boat companies to make boats better, faster, live wells, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the influence he had on just the boat market, live wells wouldn't exist if we didn't have a catch and release ethic. Without Ray Scott, we wouldn't have, or at least we wouldn't have had so quickly kill switches, which mm-hmm. that was all going towards safety of the boaters, because back in the day, you know, boats weren't quite as safe as they are now. And for those who haven't heard of it, a kill switch, you hook something to your life vest, and when you fall over, it automatically pulls a cord, and the engine shuts down, so the boat can't run over you. So,
and he required life vests, too,
yeah,
right?
Without Ray Scott, that wouldn't have happened.
Didn't he require life vest for folks? Didn't that push the PFD market?
He did. Yeah, and he kind of pioneered the inflatables. You know, he was the first guy out there promoting the inflatables, because a lot of guys didn't want to wear a big bulky vest, and so they wouldn't. Just because they're uncomfortable, so he kind of was on the front edge of that suspender Mustang survival type thing. So, yeah, ladders. He was the one who inspired boat manufacturers to put ladders on their boats so you could climb back aboard if you did fall out. So, yeah, it's the list is long and distinguished. That man accomplished.
Well, we're going to come back and pick up more with this list. Our guest, James Hall, editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, and the legacy of Ray Scott, who passed away this weekend.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I'd add in as well, I get to see him midweek instead of the end of the week. My friend Mike Ward from FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, we do that show together. He's in studio for Midday Mobile as we're talking to James Hall, editor-in-chief of Bassmaster Magazine, about the legacy of Ray Scott. Hey, talk about all these innovations, things that are still with us that were ideas from that entrepreneur, Ray Scott. What about environmental quality? I was reading through a piece you had, and it really, it was something I did not know of, that what happened with Ray Scott and serving lawsuits to polluters of water out there and what came from that. Can you tell us more?
I believe, I'm trying to remember the exact year, but I believe it was in the early 70s. There was a pretty big fish kill, I think, right down there on the Alabama River outside of Montgomery, and Ray was pretty livid about it because, you know, he's all these dead bass floating up along the sides of the river, and that it, to him, was his future. So there's a lot of reasons not to want pollution, but for him specifically, it was harmful to the waters and the bass fishing. So he sued, I think he started a campaign called Peg a Polluter, and he sued 200 different industries or manufacturers, and I think in the exact same day, to really make a statement to say that we're not going to stand up for it, and had a whole lot of bass anglers on his side, and that started a bit of a thrust nationwide, and eventually led to at least in part to the Clean Water Act. And so there was, you know, that, which is a huge, huge deal. That's a, you know, clean water for drinking, clean water for fishing, clean water for recreation. Again, that's another, you can see Ray Scott's thumbprints directly on that.
I mean, that's truly an amazing legacy. We've gone through all these things, but for somebody today to think about the Clean Water Act and this idea that we demand clean water, and this was Ray Scott. It's something. It even goes outside the United States. Here's something that starts in the South, took over the whole country, but not just the country. James, I mean, there's people fishing competitively for bass somewhere that is it tomorrow already in Japan or whatever it is across the international dateline? Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, with that, I think almost exclusively we can thank Ray Scott for bass fishing being an international sport, because without, you know, because bass, they are not native to Japan, they're not native to South Africa, they're not native to Spain. You know, Ray Scott took them to Zimbabwe himself, like hand delivered bass to Zimbabwe. Now Zimbabwe and South Africa, some of the best fishing you will find in the world. He inspired them to take fish to Europe and Japan. I'm not exactly sure if he helped get them there. Nobody would probably want to admit it, because he might have the Japanese government angry with him over that.
Yeah.
But certainly without Ray's influence, the bass fishing, it wouldn't be as popular as it is in the United States, but it would be non-existent in other countries. And right now, I think we have 22 countries that have BASS members in them.
22 countries.
Yeah, 22 different countries.
Wow. How about that? So I didn't know there was bass in Zimbabwe. I had no idea they had bass in Africa.
Yeah,
none.
It's amazing. As a matter of fact, in the if you look way back in the, I think, the late 90s, there was a young man, Zimbabwean, that caught an 18.5 pounder that was broodstock from the fish that Ray took over there initially. And so he went over there and he took this young man a replica of the 18-pound fish, and he went fishing with him out there. And you know, it has become a tremendous country for bass fishing. A little dangerous on occasion, but
yeah, hippos and crocodiles. Yeah, forget. You know, we worry about moccasins and alligators. I'll take those any day over hippos and crocodiles.
True fact.
Yeah. Hey, before we wrap up here, and just got a couple minutes left, James, if people want to read more about what we're talking about, you know, where do they go? First of all, to check it out right now, and then let's talk about it. If somebody's listened to our discussion, they go, you know what? I haven't been a member in some years, right? I didn't know, you know, this was still going. How did they get to be part of Bassmaster?
It's really pretty. Right now we have some amazing stuff on Ray on Bassmaster.com. You go there and there's a, you know, it's full obituary and a bit of his life story, which is really cool to read. There's also a huge photo gallery of old pictures of Ray, never before seen photos of some tournaments and stuff that he was in. That's also on Bassmaster.com. And then you can, you know, you can join, you can become a Bass member from Bassmaster. Really, that's the easiest way to do it. If you go to Bassmaster.com and just click on that join tab, then there's a real easy way to sign up and start getting Bassmaster magazine and all the other benefits of being a Bass member.
You think the future is for bass fishing, competitive bass fishing, 22 countries you're talking about. What's our future?
Our future is bright. I tell you, you know, as bad as COVID was in so many ways, it was really, really good for the outdoors. There was a huge spike in fishing license sales, and we saw renewed interest from people who'd been doing it for a long time, but mainly for people who hadn't done it in forever or wanted to start doing it. So I think the future is really bright.
James Hall, Editor-in-Chief of Bassmaster Magazine, I appreciate your time, and hopefully you and I can talk and Mike can talk in the future.
That'd be great, guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James.
You're welcome. There he is, James Hall. And we're out of here. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Talk to y'all tomorrow for another edition of Midday Mobile. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you along. And great to talk to James Hall, Editor-in-Chief of Bassmaster Magazine, about the legacy of Ray Scott, which is why we got what we have now with not just professional bass fishing, but all the technology. Even if you're like me, weekend warrior, somebody just likes to get after it. Boats, rods, clean water.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. How about that? How about that?
The Clean Water Act. That's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, that's something that I did not know. That
I didn't either.
This thing that's such a big deal to us about having clean water, you know, for everything. I mean, to drink, first of all, but let alone to fish in, is this Ray Scott. And Ray Scott had these motivations that made sense, right? Like catch and release.
Yeah.
Clean water. I mean, these were almost business decisions, but they ended up Wallet Bro backing that. So Wallet Bro that funds money for boat launches and all that stuff, just like Pittman Robertson Act does for land, for gun. You know, it's off excise tax off gun sales. It leads to money that comes back to the states to be able to buy land and do all that. He was just way ahead of his time.
He really was. I mean, he did a lot of things to benefit the fisherman. But, I mean, he had a goal in mind, too, because it benefited him.
But it works perfectly,
yeah.
Because when you have somebody whose motivation...
But it benefited everybody.
Right. And that's the thing we talk about with the recreational angling world, that the value of any individual fish, be that a red snapper that's, you know, or a bass or anything else out there, is so magnified. When it comes, so that fish, I mean, think about, you know, if we'd have gone back to the 50s and we said the value of that bass is not in the flesh of that bass. It's going to feed, it's going to be putting him back in so he can be caught again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big change, right?
It is a big change. Because back then, nobody was throwing fish back.
Right.
I wasn't throwing fish back.
But he had this idea that, okay. So his motivation is I need there to be plenty of fish so we have good tournaments, we get good press, we do all these things. But it ends up in an environment where it helped the fishery.
It benefited everything. It benefited everybody in the industry.
Yeah.
Not only him, it was everybody.
Yeah, somebody that's cool to think about it. And from your perspective in sporting goods, that somebody releasing that bass alive was good for business if you're selling rods and reels.
Absolutely.
He's out there to catch again.
Absolutely. Had more fish to catch. Yeah, I mean, he was ahead of his time, Sean. I really believe that. I mean, he was motivated because of making money.
Right.
But he had great ideas, and he was ahead of his time. There's no question about it.
I mean, just, you know, y'all, I mean, if you got your bass boat there, walk around your bass boat and think about the features on that thing that are driven by this, or if you just enjoy clean water or plenty of fish to catch. Now, you know, and now those ideas have been taken, you know, government runs those ideas, and state DCNR and all that are going to be watching fish populations, you know, at this level, probably like they didn't do in the 70s.
Right.
So you had a motivation there that wasn't even a report coming out. It's not like, you know, he had a report coming from DCNR back then. It was just like, hey, I need more fish to be in these waters so we can catch more fish and we can take their picture.
Well, back like he saw all those fish dead up in Montgomery
yeah,
in the river. Probably nobody did anything about it
right.
back then. You know, it was probably not much said. Might not even been in the paper.
Right.
You know, but now something like that happens, there's going to be some problems for somebody.
And y'all don't forget that as you talk about environmental things out there. For clean water and these kind of things, we as a group of sportsmen are a big voice. A big voice. And a reasonable voice. We're not, you know, people that don't want business or this or that. But, yeah, we got to hold people to account that you don't pour a bunch of mess in the water. You don't pollute. It's not okay.
That's right. It's not that we're making any money off of it. You know, like Ray
right,
was doing it.
Right.
We love the sport.
That's right.
We want it for us and our kids and our grandkids and great-grandkids down the road.
Now we've got us there. We have the voting box and all that. But in, you know, late 60s, early 70s, there weren't people thinking about that, you know, everywhere like it is now.
Not at all. I mean, he was the only one thinking about it back then that I know of. Nobody else was thinking about that. Throwing fish back, there was nobody thinking about that.
You know,
or clean water? Nobody thinking about that, I don't think.
You know, and think about the legacy and jobs, too. I think I was reading part of one of the articles over at Bassmaster that I think they say 800,000 jobs in the United States are linked to bass fishing. 800,000 jobs.
Yeah, that's a bunch. But then you think about the whole fishing industry.
Oh, out beyond that. Oh, yeah. All yeah. fishing I mean, is millions
you know,
and millions
we're
of
We're talking about, you know,
millions
the bass.
Jobs.
But, you know, you're talking about crappie and catfish and brim and snapper and grouper and billfish and on and on
yeah.
and on. Oh, man. It's a big industry. I mean, you start talking about boats, motors, trailers.
I think about hotels,
condos,
ice machines. Yeah.
All that is unbelievable.
And it's just, you know, and it's a great thing because as a sport, as recreational anglers, our motivation is to keep the stock, you know, the stock as good as possible. Not saying that a commercial person would want to keep their to be stocked so they could catch more and sell more and make money. But the amount of – if you're running a business catching fish, it's one thing. You're going to try to, you know, just like any other business, you're going to try to minimize cost, right?
Sure.
And do that. In the recreational world – that fish is – mama doesn't know how much we spend on each of those fish we catch.
Some
right?
mamas do.
Yeah, some mamas do. But, you know, it's a big deal. So, I don't know. It's just it's sad with the passing of Ray Scott, but the legacy here. And we should be, you know, proud as Alabama guy, made good. And once again, like we said, if you want to talk about promoting your business, whatever it is, you make widgets. I don't care what you do. It's not even fishing. Go look how this guy got attention.
He got attention.
He got attention.
He did get attention. Now, he was a showman.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it. He was a super salesman showman.
Yep, and that's why we are now. All right.
Yep.
Just a couple things here. Actually, talking about fishing. Also, June 11th, I got the email from the state. It's Free Fishing Day. I don't know if that's the exact title for it, but it's no license. You just fish.
Yeah.
So that's coming up on June 11th. So put that on the – I don't now know how many people in this audience don't have a license and worried about it, but you might have – you know what? It may be good if you want to take other people and introduce them to our sport. Instead of him having to get a license and all that, set a trip for June 11th. And then, you know, you've got your license, got the boat and everything, but they can just come on and go fishing.
You know, you got to think about that when you go on a fishing trip. I don't really think about it.
No, you and I are lifetime license holders.
I got
holders,
my license
yeah.
and all that. Right. I don't think about,
But if you're going to introduce somebody.
Does Jimmy have a license?
Right.
I don't even thought about it, you know. And I have taken people out there and they said, I mean, I got to have a license?
Well, yeah. then make that trip on June 11th. And there's more if you go to OutdoorAlabama.com on the Free Fishing Day. And, of course, before that, May 27th, the start of Snapper. So we got that coming up. Amberjack is open.
Amberjack's open right now.
Anybody go? You heard anything?
Really, I haven't. You know, Kirk Tillman, our buddy.
Yes.
I mean, he's been going a little bit.
Kirk Tillman has a little bit.
He catches them. Yeah, I mean,
he's catching
he's
tuna.
Good at, he's as good as it gets. Now, I will be going this week. Be my first trip out in the Gulf.
All right,
if weather permits, which it looks like weather's going to be good. We've got a house rented, and we're going to be staying down on the beach, and we're going to.
You're going to be fishing out the east side.
Well, no, I'm going to be fishing out of Fort Morgan.
Well, still, that's the east. That's not Dolphin Island.
Yeah, it's Dolphin Island. Same thing. I'm going by the lighthouse when I go out.
Okay,
it's the same thing.
It's just but weird
anyway,
having you over there.
So I'm really excited about going. I haven't been all year. Got my boat all cleaned up, and that's a little bit
ready
of a job.
Ready to go get it dirty.
You ready to get it? Slimy is what I'm ready to get it.
It's going to be interesting to see what those Amberjack numbers look like, because they are talking about that there are issues with Amberjack populations, but talking to you, they're everywhere.
Well, in the past it has been. I don't know what it is this year, but in the past there's been plenty of Amberjack everywhere. If there's a problem with Amberjack, sharks have been eating them. It's not the fishermen, it's the sharks.
So, I mean, because you were talking about trying to kingfish. We just got about a minute and a half left here. You were talking about kingfishing, trying to come next to rigs catching kings, and couldn't keep the Amberjack off.
Oh, you got to get way away from rigs, or you'd be catching Amberjack. Yeah, if you're not, you know, at least 7,500 yards, or even further sometimes, 150 yards, so you'll catch Amberjack. They'll be coming up behind the boat, hitting baits on top of the water like king mackerel do.
Well, that's how maybe we need to go trolling for them instead of dropping those gigantic
you can catch
bonita.
Them both ways.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And reminder, too, if you on the license thing, remember you have to have, even if you have a lifetime license like Mike and I, you got to get your Gulf Reef permit.
Yep.
So make sure to go online before you go. Do that fishing. Go on.
It doesn't cost anything.
But there's a $10
fee. Oh, that's right. It is a $10 fee on that. That's right.
Yeah, so you
got to
get that. You got to get that permit.
That's
so
right.
Check that out. OutdoorAlabama.com. Just hit the saltwater tab there. Go fishing and then saltwater tab. And check that out. And we are in full fishing mode now. Turkey season in the rearview mirror. There's nothing but fishing and, well, I'll talk planting a good bit in the next couple shows. So that's on the way. And you score your turkey season?
I had a good year.
Good year?
Got a limit.
I had a great year.
I'm good.
I talked to a lot of folks that had great years. I have talked to a few people that had bad years. But remember, work you do right now, too, if you're lucky to be a landowner, work you can do right now will benefit your turkeys in the future, too.
Yep.
All right. Y'all have a great one. We're on the way out of here. We'll do it again next week. And more information on the legacy of Ray Scott, go to bassmaster.com. It's all up there.